Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. This is the second half of an interview with Jerry Glenn. He's the director of the American Council of the United Nations University and the Millennium Project, which is a future studies effort run by him there. You can listen to the first half of this interview at changesurfer.com. I'm speaking still with Jerry Glenn. Jerome C. Glenn has 35 years of experience in futures research and development consulting. He's the executive director of the American Council for the United Nations University, founder and director of the Millennium Project, which is an effort to produce state of the future reports and advising for world bodies, and the author of many books, including Future Mind, Merging of the Mystical and Technological. And one of the themes that you explored in that way back in the 70s was the theme that is now emerging very popularly again, is of conscious technology. Talk a little bit about what you mean by conscious technology.
Yeah, I define conscious technology almost like in a five-point diagram where you connect up the dots into like a sphere, and what fills in the sphere is really the definition. But I will linearly explain very quickly the five dots. First is the merger of the human body and technology. With advances in bionics, we can gradually become cyborgs, and that's pretty clearly demonstrable as we move along. Second is the implementation of voice recognition, voice synthesis, and chips in everything that we do, so that the physical environment seems to become more conscious. Third, it's the appreciation that advances in technology changes our consciousness, and vice versa. For example, looking through a telescope changes our consciousness. By consciousness, I mean awareness of awareness. So when you look at a microscope, it changes as well. You go underwater, it changes it. So that the technology itself can enhance our technology. And as we improve the technology, which enhances the consciousness then says what kind of technology to invent. So it's a dynamic, positive dynamic loop between the two. Fourth, it's the belief, and this is my own subjective part, the rest are relatively objective, this is more subjective, is that the state of conscious technology, this merger of mind and machine, so to speak, doesn't necessarily have to be a good thing. And I think it can be improved, more likely to be a good thing, if we take the attitudes of the mystic and the management technocrat and merge them in some way. Because if we just go a technocratic approach, then the robotization of things does seem to be a boringly messy deal. On the other hand, if we just go the mystic side of the house, then I end up, there's plenty of areas for abuse, such as, you know, as you've seen, when they turn it into religion, turn it into a cult, and you get all messed up. But I think if we can merge the two, the mystic and technocrat, then it'll impact the way the conscious and technology merges could be better. And fifth, it's the view that there's it's a new mindset of looking at the world and the things that are in the world in the same way that the industrial mind viewed the world differently than the agricultural mind did. And sixth, it's the idea all the human and technological capacity evolved to a point that it's all connected into an integrated whole, can be self-conscious and can evolve in a more intelligent fashion, which doesn't mean we all become cyborgs in the Star Trek Borg sense. My belief is that what you take out of a more integrated whole becomes far more individual and subjective than if you have fewer choice. So I expect extremely diverse elements within it and not this mass mind.
We have a group now called Trans Spirit. It's a discussion group online where we talk about the neurotheological research. And some of the stuff is very encouraging that we may be able to plug into these religious experiences. But some of the stuff, as I said, is very scary. Like, there's this recent study out about oxytocin, which is a hormone. And they dosed people with it, and it turned out that they became far more trusting.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I remember that.
And so when you talk about the not only the neurotechnologies that are developing, but also the increasing interdependence of people and the possibility of collective intelligence and things like that, there is this this scary notion that there might be some kind of new forms of authoritarianism and totalitarianism, yep. which are far more intrusive yep. than they had could have been in the past.
Absolutely true.
And are those the kind of existential threats or future threats to the future existence of the human race that your future studies folks and the State of the Future reports are looking at?
That particularly one we haven't walked into directly. The one that we've gotten a bit into is what we refer to as CMAD, which is just a play on the idea of science gone mad, so to speak. But the abbreviation is single individual massively destructive. And focus more on the ability of an individual to craft a microorganism in such a way to wipe out a lot of people without and with a long incubation period. So it's too late when they know it's there.
So and weapons of mass destruction, basically.
That can be disease.
Mm-hmm.
It can be disease that's just not able to be detected until it's too late. Because a lot of other things you can detect, like the nuclear materials and the chemical materials, but the biological stuff is harder to catch ahead of time, I think. And I can imagine more easily individuals in the future having sort of a bio kit, pharmaceutical bio kit, that they could then manipulate and go around to airports and, you know, make them available and so forth. So in a very relatively speaking short period of time, you could infect an awful lot of the world.
I imagine that in the future, our immune systems will have something akin to the Symantec antivirus, where whenever a new threat is detected in anyone's bodies, it emails a copy of it back to the central headquarters at the WHO, and then an update goes out to everybody's system.
But imagine your incubation period. If you have a long incubation sort of comes out in a relatively simultaneous time, it's pretty tough. But there is, as you may know better than I don't know, military medical research trying to figure out how to bring up the whole immune system fast. Part of the trouble is how long can the body can handle that. The idea is that you can, the race of creating vaccinations and the distribution of it in time for all variations coming up is, I think, a losing battle. So an alternative strategy is simply how do you make the immune system be able to gin up to handle anything.
Right. And also, our immune systems aren't that smart. They attack our own bodies when they get too zooped
up. That's what I'm saying. How long you can handle that is another question, right?
Right. You invented a futures technology called the futures wheel, forecasting technique. And tell us how that one works.
Well, the idea was to help people think in terms of multi-concepts rather than single concepts, and to think in terms of tertiary consequences rather than just, you know, first-order consequences. The idea was you take any trend or event, doesn't matter, and you take a piece of paper and write that word, whether it's transhumanism, whatever it happens to be, just write the word transhumanism, for example, in the middle, draw a little circle around it, and then draw out maybe about 8 spokes or so, and then at the end of each spoke, write whatever you think necessarily would go along with that. You got to read more, you deal with more of the internet, etc., whatever you see as necessarily being associated with transhumanism. And then from each of those little ends of those spokes, draw circles on those, and then draw maybe 3 or so little lines going out from them. So you imagine like a rock in a pond. As you put the rock in, it ripples out. So futures wheel is you're throwing like transhumanism into your awareness, and then say, what are the associations of that, and then what are the associations of the association? So they keep going out ripple-like or bicycle wheel-like so that you get to an outer edge that you might get into counterintuitive perceptions. For example, one of the first times I did this with 5-year-old fifth-grade kids, one guy had more trends on the on his futures wheel and ended up at the end with more death. And he throws down his pencil and says, this doesn't make any sense. And so the teacher wisely said, well, find your mistake. So the kid goes through his little futures wheel and ends up going, well, it seems if we have more people the way we are living, then we have a problem. But so we either have to change the way we live or have fewer people. Well, I pretty well nailed the population issue in one sentence. So the idea is that we have so much information in our brain already. It may not only be a question of giving us more information, but having ourselves organize it and thinking in terms of secondary and tertiary consequences. So the futures wheel is just a teaching technique originally to have kids just put future ideas and events on the air and just see where they go.
You said a magic word there in terms of the policy debates, which is population. I know that you're fully versed in this debate. So where do you come down on the question of whether we actually have a population crisis? I mean, I think probably you agree that we should empower women and spread access to reproductive health technology. But do you think that there actually is a Malthusian crunch coming? Are we facing that kind of problem?
No. I mean, Malthus historically was shown to be wrong because of two simple things. One, technology, and the other is new ideas. Obviously, in a closed system, and that's the case. But technology in the mind is not a closed system. It's going to be tough. I mean, I have sympathy for the folks that are worried about, you know, the numbers of people, because I mean, you add another 2.7 billion people between here and 2050, and that's pretty tight in a lot of areas. But then the issue is because of crashing fertility rates, if they continue as they are, we could have actually a billion fewer people unless life extension kicks in, which it will. If it doesn't, though, then you end up with potentially a billion fewer people in 2100 than you have today, which would have surprised the hell out of people. But my guess is that we will learn how to use our own stem cells to improve ourselves, and we'll learn something about telomeres, and we'll do a variety of things. And I think that it's inconceivable that we won't have major breakthroughs when there's so many potential breakthroughs already on the labs people are looking at. There won't be major breakthroughs. They'll be publicly available eventually. So people will live indefinitely, sooner or later. And that doesn't mean that they're going to be like shriveled up old beings. I suspect them to be in better... I suspect that if I keep myself together for a while, that if I do live 100 years more, that I'd be in better shape 100 years from now than I am today. And I'm not in too bad shape. So I don't have an image of a whole mess of old people on Social Security in the world. And secondly, the concept of old age, I think, is going to radically change. If you're in an agricultural or industrial economy, which we've been for a long time, you want to retire. You know, you don't want to work in a factory your whole lifetime. You don't want to be breaking your back, you know, digging in a ditch all the time. But if you're making a living out of your own creativity, where you're searching for your own markets rather than looking for non-existent jobs, then it seems to me you wouldn't want to stop being you. And, you know, and the more you are, the more you evolve yourself, it seems to me that that's a great way to continue on. And so the concept of retirement, I think, will eventually be quite drastically different, and we're going to have to give up the notion of retiring people and paying them at 65 years old. The economics just don't match.
I completely agree. I've become part of this basic income guarantee movement, and one of the things I like about the basic income guarantee idea is that it's a way to kind of radically reconceptualize the way that people might become dependents of the state. And say, if there is radical life extension and a birth dearth and automation of jobs and globalization, then you wouldn't want to just have people over 65 be getting the dole. You would want to have a renegotiation of the dole for all of society and then who gets to work. So, asteroids, other kinds of existential threats, are these things that your futures research takes into account? I recently finished a short history of Nearly Everything by Bill Bryson, and a wonderful book. And one of the things that he mentions in there are some of the natural disaster type threats that intelligent life of all kinds faces, gamma ray bursts and volcanic eruptions.
Oh, well, sure. If the sun belches more than it has in the past, we could be gone.
Exactly.
Boom, just like that.
This, I think, is another
tape on the air.
It's another argument for emerging technologies, because we need to become a more impervious species.
Well, it's like diversify your bets. I mean, my attitude is the sooner we get off the Earth, the better.
And what do you think the prospects are for the space program? The Chinese want to colonize the moon, apparently.
Yeah, so does the U.S., by the way.
Yeah, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's Bush's current...
Oh, well, yeah, but his father said he wanted to colonize Mars as well, so...
There was a guy named Kraft Ehrke who did the original space shuttle design, who I always thought may have been recognized properly. He made the comment that, look, imagine life as not simply like we have it here, but imagine life, all of life, and the Earth being, in a sense, the womb, and that we're dependent upon mommy, sun, so to speak, and imagine we eventually get born off into out of the solar system, and then we actually find out who we are. The idea being to think that we know what human beings are now would be like saying that you know what you are when you have gill slits inside of the womb. And he makes a story of not in a forecast of pregnancy of a woman saying that it's 5 months, everything is fine, there's enough natural resources, there's enough room to grow, everything's fine. By the 7th month, you know, the futures come out and say, hey, we've got a couple of problems coming up. By the 9th and 10th month, you know, the alarm bells are going off, but lo and behold, we're born. System change. So maybe we'll have a system change and leave the solar system at some point. What makes that happen may very well be this natural evolution. I mean, you're familiar with those singularity stuff. There's all kinds of different ways of thinking in terms of space travel. You know, the elevator is looking more plausible today with the nanotubes. Don't know if that's going to happen, but quality control on it. But there's so many things now about potentially making it off the Earth that we did not have 30 years ago. I see no reason at some point that it becomes a logical, natural progression of evolution of the human spirit. And it's also a security issue because, as we mentioned, the sun belches, we're gone. So why not diversify your portfolio?
I'm speaking with Jerry Glenn. He's the director of the Millennium Project at the American Council for the United Nations University. In terms of that global belch and our evolution off this planet, one of the things that I think transhumanists always point out is that one of the prerequisites of that getting off the planet may in fact be that we have to change our bodies, that our meat sacks aren't very well adapted for the kinds of rigors that space would require. So if we did want to get off the planet, we would have to change pretty radically.
Well, I would guess that we will get off the Earth, or not off the Earth, where we are now, beyond the solar system, beyond the solar dependency, in a variety of ways. I would expect a whole range from the artificial life forms, which would achieve consciousness and self-reproduce themselves, all the way through creating the artificial environments that can maintain a simulated Earth-like existence. And then you can imagine the range of cultures and body adaptations and genetic engineering between those two extremes. I would expect the whole range to go, and I would encourage a whole range. We don't know necessarily the best way to have long-term post-star dependency civilization exist. I don't know. Could be that the Nadites is the way, the optimum deal. I don't know.
You mentioned earlier the phrase singularity, and now you've mentioned the notion of AI going out into space. And the singularity concept that there are exponential trends in the advance of technology which may lead to a point beyond which we can't predict anything, mm-hmm. It's been a pretty fundamental challenge, it seems, to futures research. There are very few futurists who have kind of systematically grappled with the notion that I can predict up to trends up to 2030 or 2050, but beyond that, all bets are off. Do you see the singularity notion as being, you know, the elephant in the room at the Future Studies conference?
Well, I think it's a great stimulator more than an elephant. I think it's a good idea to shake people up and think through these things. The reason I was chuckling before is I actually agreed to write 1,000-year scenarios. Your viewers or listeners can get that at their website you mentioned before. And I think even Kurzweil Ray's website has got, I think, them too. We did it simply because the year 2000 was coming up. People were looking 1,000 years back, and people weren't looking much 1,000 years out. So we figured, okay, let's give it a whack. And I think we have 6 alternative 1,000-year scenarios there, which, of course, we'll all laugh at 1,000 years from now.
The ACUNU.org website, yeah. And, I've been looking at those. It's a wonderful set of scenarios.
You looked at the 1,000-year scenarios?
Yeah, I'm looking at them right now, as a matter of fact.
Okay.
Yeah, so you've got still alive at 3,000, so
right.
life extension, end of humanity, and the rise of Phoenix. What's the rise of Phoenix?
I'm not sure, but I think that was where everything goes to pot and a whole new thing comes out of it.
Oh, okay. Great divides, so...
Great divides is the idea that touches a little bit on the idea of a range of kinds of life. So you have your naturals all the way to your nanites that actually arbitrate between the conscious technology beings and the naturals, but that's a long, complex story.
That touches back on this notion of citizenship for me because I get asked often, obviously, what post-humanity is, what it means for there to be post-humans. And mm-hmm. I say, you know, that for us, it's really not so much about saying this is human and this is post-human as questioning the whole legitimacy of those categories to begin with. Because I think probably in 1,000 years, there will still be people around who have, you know, who live forever, who have computers for brains, who have 6 arms and green skin, but who still consider themselves human because that's the tribe they choose to see themselves in the lineage of. And already there are people around today who, because they have artificial organs or glasses or something like that, don't consider themselves part of the human race anymore. So it's more of a tribal identity. And as such, you know, there's no necessary reason why humanity would have to divide.
Right.
But you think that this is one of the possibilities of these kinds
sure.
of tribal, yeah.
I mean, one of the things I learned in my 35 years is the future is going to be more than most people think.
Right.
And whatever it is, more, it's increasing complexity. So if you think, is it going to be A versus B, which one's going to win? What happens is A survives in some new relationship with B, and C occurs to become dominant.
Right. I've, of course, been a long fan of speculative fiction, and there's this old truism that most speculative fiction only pursues the extrapolation of one technology and its effect on, you know, one thing. And it's very difficult to extrapolate second and third and fourth order effects.
Yeah, well, that brings up one of the reasons for doing the futures wheel is another technique that your listeners might want to try sometime. If you take, let's say, 5 technological hotshot breakthroughs that you think are the seminal big deals, make like a checkerboard grid and repeat the 5 down one side and repeat the same ones across the top. So you got the same ones on the top row and the same left column. And then the grid in the middle, you say, how would technology A change or bring about or change some way technology B? You just fill in the whole grid, and you end up with a whole set of mini scenarios of technological change and innovations. So you're cross-impacting one trend on another, or one event on another.
The NBIC program of the National Science Foundation is an example of that. They got brought together people who weren't talking together before, but nanotech, biotech, info tech, and cognitive tech folks. And they said, what happens if all of your fields start to converge? And they came out with some pretty radical transhumanist thinking out of
that.
Sure
they do.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, Jerry, it's been wonderful. What are the next stages for the project that you're involved with? You're coming out with this book, The State of the Future,
2005, State of the Future. That comes out hopefully in a couple months.
Uh-huh. And
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
The second is series on methods. We have Futures Research Methodology, largest compendium, a CD-ROM of different methods. And we're updating that, and hopefully that comes out in the following 2 months after so of that. Then we will probably do some global energy scenarios, start working on that in a few months, and then also take on the future ethical issues stuff that we looked at before and take that into a round 3 about what are the ways to begin to resolve potential resolutions to some of these values and future ethical issues. And we also may do another one on how, if the changing role of women continues to change as it is, how might that influence the 15 global challenges we face, from organized crime to dealing with water problems and so forth. Those are some of the things we got on the docket coming up.
So people can read all about these things at the acunu.org website. There's also a mailing list that they can get on there.
Yeah, sign up on their public listserv.
Uh-huh. And read the State of the Future reports. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Jerry. I really appreciate it. It's been fascinating. I've been speaking with Jerry Glenn. He's the executive director of the American Council of the United Nations University. He co-founded and directs the Millennium Project, which advises corporations, organizations, governments about the future, and publishes the State of the Future reports. And he's the author of many books, including Future Mind, Merging the Mystical and the Technological in the 21st Century. Thanks again for joining us, and I hope we'll have you back soon.
Thank you. I'd like to be here.
This was the second half of our interview with Jerry Glenn. The first half of the interview is available at changesurfer.com. Stay tuned now for a special treat, the song Transhumanism by Charles Cam.
Is this change you're speaking of?
It sounds too weird to me.
We're humans and we'll be this way throughout eternity.
The world is changing for the human race as our end is coming near. We'll put
gotten our new computer faces, there's something we must fear. You're in denial, changing dials after all these years. Ignoring soaring, changes boring in your eyes and ears. Transhumanism. Evolving through our biology till it finally got us here. We'll put ourselves through technology in just the next few years. No longer human, but a new blend, a brand new entity. Our mind expanding as we're landing into what we'll be. Transhumanism.
Transform when the fills will now roam. We'll worm our way through planets just to see what it feels like to be immortal gods that we will be in a universe that's one of so many. New dimensions we will find, even travel through our time and discover things we never could conceive. Though you're skeptical right now, it doesn't matter anyhow. When we merge with our computers, you'll believe
in
That was Transhumanism by Charles Cam. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts with me, Dr. J, you can contact me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. That's jhughes@changesurfer.com. Or you can read my Change Surfing columns at betterhumans.com or check out the collaborative Cyborg Democracy blog I participate in at cyborgdemocracy.net. Or you can read my new book, Citizen Cyborg. For more details about Citizen Cyborg, visit cyborgdemocracy.net. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3, thanks to the AInfos Radio Project. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.